Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to a special episode of the River Blast Podcast. We're not even going to give this one a player number to label it, because this is a special one.
It's 3.5.
3.5, 3.5, yeah. Which is possibly, when you're listening to this, how many games out the Pirates are in the wild card. Actually, definitely not. I don't know. But anyway.
It was 3.5 coming in, so that's actually pretty good.
That could be. Anyway, this is the special River Blast Podcast trade deadline reaction. We are recording this at 10:45 p.m. in an open booth that one of us is definitely not allowed in the PNC Park press box. And Alex, holy what a day.
You're bleeping that, right?
Yeah, we're going to bleep it out. I don't know who's sponsoring this. Jason definitely wouldn't appreciate that. But yeah, we're going to bleep that out. But
okay.
Holy this was one day to remember for the entire Pirates organization.
Yeah, I mean, start to finish, it literally was 24 hours, because at like 1:30 in the morning, they get Kella in that trade. Then at 4 o'clock, they get Chris Archer.
Let's start with Kella. You're a night owl. Were you awake when this deal went down?
I was. I was actually winding down. I'm up until 3 a.m. every night. But for whatever reason, I was winding down at 1:30. I was on the couch. I had a quick pitch on. I had my Marvel Unlimited app open. I was getting ready to go, and I just saw on the trade underneath, it's like, Pirates acquire, okay, I guess I'm up. I had to write something then and there.
I knew that today would be a big day. I didn't know how so. If they got someone, it was going to be exciting. If they didn't make a move, it was going to be a big day for a completely different reason. But I went to bed last night at like midnight, because I was like, I'm going to need some rest. I'm going to need a lot of energy from tomorrow. You know, being a producer for the Fan, the flagship of the Pirates, I knew I was going to be running all over the place to get sound, to get stats, to get, you know, Jack whatever snack he wanted. You know, just it was going to be a busy day, so I wanted to get some rest. And at 3 a.m., my dad comes in my room and tells me that the Pirates got Kella from the Texas Rangers. What a deal that was. So let's get into that one. Just, you know, before we break down, you know, what they gave up and everything, just getting Kella, you know, how big is that for their bullpen?
Well, I mean, there's two ways to look at it. I mean, are they 47-1 now after the seventh inning whenever they were leading?
I believe so.
Okay. So if you want to look very literally at how much a setup man could help, we're going to assume that he's the new eighth inning guy, because the Pirates will
go prehistoric with it.
We'll go with the traditional seventh inning guy, eighth inning guy, closer, with Crick probably being the seventh inning guy over Santana. So if you want to look at like that, I don't know how much it would help, but there have been 10 times this year whenever the Pirates were leading or tied after six innings that they end up losing. So getting Crick there, Crick has been the most reliable guy out of the bullpen all year, or at least the most consistent. I don't think there's much debate there.
Yeah, I like this move.
So, it helps in that regard. It shortens the game by one inning, potentially for two other years also. And today, I think, was a great example of that. Kella wasn't on the team yet, so they had to send Tyon back out to go through the third time through the order in the seventh inning. His pitch count was good enough, but he'd been hit hard, you know, up to that point. If they had Kella, I'm sure they would have just gone the Crick right there and said, thanks for the 6-3.
Yeah, that's, regardless of how they use him, I would use him in a much more modern way. Either make him the closer and allow Vasquez to be your flamethrower, or make this guy himself as a flamethrower. With his numbers against lefties, I don't know if I would do that, but the fact that he has two dominant pitches, similar to Hader, similar to Andrew Miller, I kind of want to use him in that same light. But regardless of how they use him, like you said, this pretty much gives the starting rotation a green light to say, just get to the sixth and you're done. We will win the game if you give us six innings. You could probably even give us five and we'll be okay. Four, you're testing us, but we might be able to still, you know, get through if you keep it close. That's the first thing this does. And the second thing this does, it gives everyone a little bit of a relief as far as depth, where if Vasquez goes down, there was points in this year with this bullpen where we would say, you know, if Vasquez had a day off, who in the world is going to close out this game in a close game? I mean, now with Crick pitching well, that question's kind of answering itself. But, you know, with Crick goes down, you can plug Keller right in there. Vasquez goes down, you have a backup closer. You need someone to come in with bases, with runners on base. Keller has postseason experience doing that at, like, 19 years old. So he's more than ready, or maybe not 19, but, like, 21 years old. He's more than ready to go in to any role that you throw him in. So I just think that that depth is so valuable to a team that, A, is fighting for the postseason, and B, could be pitching in a one-game playoff. So that's what I like about that move.
If we can, we shouldn't be thinking about one-game playoffs quite yet, but let's get crazy here.
Okay.
Let's get crazy. How did the New York Yankees win last year's wild card game?
It wasn't with Severino.
It was with their bullpen.
Yeah.
And I think both of these trades obviously were made to help the team get to the postseason and in future years, you know, compete. But more immediately, if they do get into that one-game playoff, it's not like in 2014 whenever they had Edson Volquez starting up against Mad Bum. It was like, okay, well, that's not going to work. But, yeah. Hey, we got here at
this
least.
This is less than ideal.
This actually is ideal, I guess you could say.
Yeah, so let's move on to the next trade. This one, while Kella was a good one, I mean, this is one of the, I would say one of the top five most unforgettable moments I've experienced as a Pirates fan. Simply because it's my first year covering the team, being in the clubhouse, and getting to see this trade go down inside the Pirates clubhouse was incredible. I mean, this Chris Archer is a name that, you know, people have thrown that out for the Pirates for years to go get, and it just never seemed real. I mean, I talked to my dad this morning. He's like, you think they'll get Archer? MLB Network saying they might get him, and I don't know, man. Something will go wrong. My boss at KDKA asked me, you think they're going to get Archer? And I said, I don't know. And you're just seeing these rumors, and it's, oh, we're with the Brewers. Oh, we're going against the Dodgers, the Braves. They got deeper farm systems. But, like, this team just did not quit. And at 3:57 p.m., I know it was announced a little bit earlier than that, it became official that Chris Archer is now a member of the Pittsburgh Pirates organization. And, wow. I mean, that's a move that's fans have been waiting for a while. I mean, this was a long time coming. Maybe not with Archer, but I think that, you know, missing out on guys like David Freese in the past, missing out on David Price. Yes, we have David Freese. Missing out on other big names that we could have potentially brought in during, you know, that 3-year playoffs stretch. This kind of, I don't want to say it makes up for it, because we'll never know what those teams would have done had you added a legitimate star to them. But this, I think, makes a lot of amends for not signing a free agent this past offseason. And it shows the fans and the team inside the locker room that the general manager isn't full of crap, that he's willing to back up his words, and he went out and he gave them the guy to help get them to the postseason.
Chris Archer was not only the big whale of a catch for this offseason, you know, the big name that's been floated out there. He was the big name in 2017.
Mm-hmm.
He was the big name in 2016. Yeah. This was the guy, and it's, I don't think it's really going to sink in fully until he throws that first pitch, whether it's on
that mound we're looking at right now.
Yeah, presumably against the Cardinals at, you know, some point this next series. It's hard to almost believe. I mean, this guy, he's underperforming this year. But I'm going to throw out a stat real fast to wrap up my, you know, point here. He has two unbelievably dominant pitches. The slider hasn't played this year, but in the past, it has been one of the best sliders in baseball. The fastball, we all know the Pirates love the fastball. I mean, that works. So maybe they just make a little tweak, you know, and that changeup can be a third pitch, even if it is just to lefties, and he just goes with a two-pitch mix against righties, like a lot of people. Like a lot of right-handers do. I mean, he has good enough stuff that he can get away with that. It's It's good for the 2018 part. It's great for the 2018 parts. It's great for the 2019 parts. And it could be great for the 2020 and 2021 parts as well. And Kella also has 2 years of control also. And Tyon talked about that. You know, these aren't guys who are just going to be in and out. They're going to come back to spring training next year. And Chris Archer is going to be, you know, with J-Mo. He's going to be with Musgrove. He's going to be with these guys, you know, growing. Overall, I said I had a stat here for Archer. And then I'll let you get back on. Archer has been lit up by two teams this year. The Orioles and the Yankees. Whenever he faces them, 6.56 ERA, 5.77 FIP, 3.95 WOBA. Against every other team in baseball, 3.59 ERA, 2.93 FIP, 3.04 WOBA. The FIP's cut in half, the ERA drops 3 runs. He becomes the frontline starter that there wasn't available in baseball if you just take away the two teams that he can't, you know, get outs again. And you know what? Baltimore and New York, they can't hurt you anymore, not in the National League. I think that's something that's kind of thrown off. People don't put enough credit in. Whenever you go from the American League East to a National League club, you just had the competition you have to face plummet hitting-wise. It's a lot easier for him now. I think this is going to be a good fit.
And you're not facing a designated hitter either. That's regardless true. Of where that's you're coming from in the American League. Exactly. That's essentially one more inning of work when you're facing a designated hitter. So this that alone is a load off. But then, yeah, you talk about this guy has been facing Aaron Judge, Mookie Betts, I mean, David Ortiz for a while. I mean, you pick he's facing Mike Trout in the American League. He's facing, lineups like the Cleveland Indians, the Houston Astros, more often than you would, you know. The AL is loaded with power bats and hitters' parks. And he is going to now pitch in the National League, which is dominated by pitching and pitchers' parks. So I think this move is going to be beneficial for this team in so many different ways. As you said, Alex, it's going to benefit them in the future. It's going to benefit them now. It's going to benefit them, you know, raising their spirits. And it should benefit them in ticket sales. If this move doesn't get fans to the ballpark, I do not know what will. I mean, I saw something on Twitter. I forget who said it. This, you can make an argument, this is the biggest Pirates deadline pickup since Bill Madlock in 1979.
Yeah, you could definitely make that case. I went to a family event this past weekend, and, you know, you go there, you have fun, have a couple beers, and I haven't seen some of these people, you know, in a long time, friends of the family, and they come up to me, they start talking Pirates baseball, and I'm like, why do the Pirates suck? And this is, like, after they won 11 in a row and stuff. It's like they're over 500.
Should say just listen to our podcast. We'll break it all down.
We'll break it all down. I should have. Shameless plug. Mm-hmm. But there is a definite perception problem. Speaking of perception, sound, is there sound death perception? Because those military helicopters are going off again. All right.
Yeah. During the game, like, 4 military helicopters did a couple laps around the ballpark,
and not it was both intimidating at all.
I speak for yourself. That was wild. That was wild. The second time I thought they were crashing. I legitimately thought they were going to land on the Clemente Wall. But continue. Sorry, they're gone now.
They're gone now. They can't hurt us anymore. Just like Baltimore and the Yankees to Chris Archer.
We both respect the troops, but you guys are going to have to wait for this episode to come out like everyone else. We're sorry. We can't give it to you early. If you want to fly up to the window and somehow silence the choppers, maybe you can hear it, but that's just the only way you're going to get it. Continue, Alex.
They have a perception problem, because even whenever we broke down the moves, you know, they didn't like that they traded Kutch. And if you don't watch Pirates baseball every game, if you're a casual fan, or even a step up from a casual fan, not a diehard, right there, you look at the Kutch trade, this is a guy that you've liked for years, it stinks whenever he's gone. And, you know, later in the conversation, talking about bullpen, they bring up Kyle Crick. They're like, oh, yeah, well, I really like Crick. And it's like, well, I got bad news on how they got Crick. I got bad news why they got Dickerson, who you really like. It's because they had an opening as a four-corner outfielder. There's just a bunch of little things like that. This, I think, fights against that perception problem. Because Chris Archer, like we said, the stats overall is on the year are not great. But Chris Archer, you ask your Joe Schmo average baseball fan on the street, Chris Archer is an ace in baseball. And for the last how many years have we heard?
Six, 7 years.
The Pirates would be great, but they don't have an ace.
Yeah.
They don't have an ace pitcher. Well, guess what? They got now for the next 3 years and 2 months.
Yeah.
They've got an ace.
And
At least someone who's perceived as an ace.
Now, I don't think this erases the anger towards Bob Nutting. And honestly, until this team wins a World Series, that will never go away.
No.
And I think that's kind of fair. But Neil Huntington, I think, just redeemed himself for about, 3 years' worth of sketchy decisions from time to time. You know, he had a good trade with acquiring Vasquez and Hearn, which we'll get into in a second. He had a good trade getting Dickerson here. He made some good moves. But since 2015, I would say he's had more losses than wins when it comes to, signings and trades.
That's fair.
But that today made up for all of that. And it doesn't matter. I mean, it does matter. I mean, if these guys go out and they get hurt or they just severely underperform, that's one thing. But you can't really control either of those factors. He put a team out there that has a chance to win. And that's something that people have criticized him of not being able to do. So let's move on now to what we gave up, what the Pirates gave up. First trade is Alex might be one of the 10 people upset with what they had to give up. He was super excited until he figured out who they gave up for it, and then we would have had to bleep out his response too. He was not happy with Taylor Hearn going to the Tampa Bay Rays. And while I too was on the Taylor Hearn bandwagon, I saw a lot of promise in him. I saw him being, at the end of the day, what Kella already is, just as a left-hander, which obviously would be more attractive. But Kella being a year older, just 1 year older than Hearn, and having 4 years of Major League Baseball experience, playoff experience, having the numbers that he does against right-handed hitters, I think that's well worth the price.
Well, now that, Archer's also in the mix, I mean, let's just look at this rotation. You got J-Mo, you've got Archer, you've got Musgrove, you've got
Williams
slash Cole, I'll just say for, slash Kingham for intents and purposes, and then Ivan Nova, presumably just for 2019, and then Mitch Keller going forward after that. The rotation looks set. They know what they want to do. I mean, there really isn't a place, I guess, for Hearn except the bullpen. I thought he was, last time I said he was Tony Watson with a little extra mustard.
Yeah.
And I still stand by that. I really liked him. I said he was one of my four untouchables, in this last one.
Almost all of them. No, wait, two of your four got traded, right?
Only one so far.
Only one?
Okay, we don't know who the other player to be named later is.
We know that it won't be Ke'Bryan Hayes, though.
We know it's not Hayes, but Rob Beertemple of the Athletic said that it's a significant name, so I seriously doubt Keller.
No, but my guess would be either Cole Tucker
or Newman. That's where mine, Newman or Cole Tucker, knowing Tampa Bay's, love affair with middle infield prospects. I have no proof for that. That's pure speculation on my part, but if I'm just reading the palm leaves, right?
There's been speculation that it could be Jung Ho, which if it is, please take him. But what about, do you think Swaggerty, this year's first round pick? That's just too early. I mean, he's already a top 100 prospect, but it can't be him?
It can't be him. You can't trade a draft pick until after the World Series, and you can't list him as a player to be named later anymore. That's a loophole.
All right. Well, there you go. So then let's talk about, the bigger price that we paid. Acquiring Chris Archer, you already mentioned the player to be named later. The player to be named later in the first trade, you assume that's a low-level prospect.
Yeah.
At worst, that's a guy on the Double-A team, I'd imagine. My guess is probably much lower than that, though.
Or if it's AAA, it's such a low ceiling.
Yeah. And that would be fine. But the names, I mean, you could go all day as the player to be named later for this, this Archer trade. It could be O'Neill Cruz. It could be Will Craig, maybe. I mean, there's a whole bunch of different possibilities. But the two players that we do know, as this helicopter continues to do laps, weird time to do that. But anyway, the two names that we do know who the Pirates are losing are guys that over the past 4 or 5 years we have heard about how they will be the future of this team. Tyler Glasnow and Austin Meadows. And, you know, while they, I'm glad that they made this deal, and I wish both of them nothing but the best in Tampa, part of me realizes, like, you know, had you traded these guys earlier, we might have been able to never, we might have been able to avoid the last two seasons. But hindsight is hindsight. I respect the guts displayed by Huntington to really deal away a legitimate prospect. And you trade away Meadows, this more than likely means Dickerson is staying for an extended amount of time. And Glasnow, as much as you liked him, liked his potential, I kind of like separating, just cutting ties. Go learn to be you. We have the bullpen. We have the starting rotation. We don't really have a need for you here.
I just want to throw this out here as a thought. This trade deadline was made possible through the moves that people were so against, so ugly moves, by Huntington in 2016 and this past offseason. The Melanson trade, the Cole trade, the Kutch trade. Melanson trade, you got Hearn. You flip Hearn for Kella.
Mm-hmm.
The Cole trade and Kutch trade, you got an outfielder. So you that upper-level outfielder that made Meadows expendable.
Yes.
And it created a job opening for Corey Dickerson, which, you know, now you don't need Meadows, you know, to be this immediate guy anymore.
And you add Kyle Crick.
And you add, not even counting Kyle Crick into this equation, I'm just talking about...
Well, I'm saying you add...
Prospect-wise, yeah. If you... The only people outside of the world of these, you know, previous three trades where they traded away their best bullpen, their best starter, and their best position player... Or, you know, their perceived best high ceiling are Glasnow and the two players to be named.
Yeah.
Presumably the two players to be named. I mean, I guess one of them could be like Brian Reynolds or something, but probably not.
Yeah, I doubt that they would not agree to giving away two of their top three outfield prospects.
No, but it's interesting that this is it. People say, oh, 2015 Pirates, oh, they didn't go for it. Well, wait a minute. They did. They got Soria to, you know, help shore up the back end of the bullpen. No pitcher had a better final 2 months of the season than Hap.
Blanton was incredible.
Blanton was a great middle reliever. Aramis Ramirez was a steady guy at third base whenever they needed a steady guy.
Michael Morse had been on how many World Series teams? You know, corner guy.
Decent bench power guy, yeah. So, I mean, that's bogus. And the 2013 team, maybe... You know, you can make an argument because Bird was a good fit, you know, but, you know, he only played a month and a half.
So yeah, had they made moves at the deadline, like July 31st, maybe that team wins a division then.
Maybe.
But then again, hindsight 2020.
Hindsight.
I don't think anyone looking back at 2013 can really complain.
No.
That was a very, very magical season.
And I think the three teams that you can really look at where they didn't do anything, or the two teams... that were leading up as precursors were 2014 and 2017. And in 2014, Huntington now expresses regret, like, I should have gone for it. I should have gone for it more in 2014. It, you know, landed that David Price or John Lester, who they were attached to. In 2017, he didn't go for it, you know, traded Watson, brought in Benoit, basically, you know, wash at the time.
Yeah.
But, and that ended up being... probably the right decision. Maybe if they would have, you know, gone and, you know, gotten a J.D. Martinez or something, that would have changed the dynamic in the clubhouse, and, you know, they would have gone on a stretch. Who knows? But this is the team that he's like, you know what? I'm willing to go for it this year. I think that says a lot. And you know what? This ball game that we just saw tonight, where they went punch for punch with the Chicago Cubbies, who had been their bully for the last 4 years, and they come out on top 5-4, I think that says a lot. Maybe they just had a little extra adrenaline going through them today. I mean, J-Mo was, you know, much more emotional on the mound than he's
like
ever
Chad
been.
Yeah, Chad Cool out there, emotionally anyway.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that win, you know, That win had Cubs comeback written all over it.
It really did.
In the late innings, but, you know, I think that boost in morale might have pushed them over the finish line today. And you think it was electric, you know, the win here. Wait till this weekend when these two new players are in. I'm expecting a very exciting series against the Cardinals this weekend. But let's talk about the remainder of the season, Alex, as we wrap this thing up. Is this team good enough to make the playoffs?
Yes. It's good enough. That doesn't mean that they will.
Yes, I agree. I think right now, if you start the season right now, on this day, and you play 162 games, this team is a playoff team. Maybe not a division-winning team. This team is good enough to be in the top five of the National League. However, they dug themselves into quite a hole in late May and all through the month of June. So, I don't know if this, even with these additions, which makes them a lot better of a team, I don't know if this is enough to dig them out of this hole. I mean, you just got to hope that, you got to catch three teams, I guess, and you got to keep playing this great pace of baseball, which they, I think, are capable of. A lot needs to happen. But what these moves do guarantee is, I was talking to Chris Mack, the host of the Pirates pre- and post-game show. I said, we are going to have something to talk about, something to be interested in until the final week of September. And if you would have told me coming into this year with all the negativity around this organization that we could be interested in the Pirates because they have a fighting chance to make a wild card game going into the final week of September potentially, that they would be making two of the biggest trades on the final day of the deadline, I would have laughed in your face. But this is where we're at, and that's super exciting.
This team, through the first month and a half of the season, we all know, went 27-18. That's a 600 winning percentage. Mm-hmm. If they have a 600 winning percentage down the stretch, they'll win what, 90? 90 will get you a playoff.
Yeah.
And you know what, that 27-18 Pirates team, maybe they were overachieving, but they did not have Archer, they did not have Kella, and they were starting like Steven Brault. This is a better team than it was in mid-May. Not only on paper, but in application.
Yeah.
So if they could just go with that April to mid-May pace, which, yeah, they are overachieving, they're in the playoffs. I don't think there's any way. No National League team has won 88 games and missed the playoffs since they added that fifth playoff spot.
And
that's the go-to number. And what are they right now? Today was win number 55?
56, I believe. They're 56 and 52.
56 and 52?
Yeah.
Okay, so back in the envelope map, that needs to be 32 and 22. That's
doable.
Yeah, that's the 600 winning percentage. That's doable. I don't see how this team could do it for a month and a half, and now they're asking to do it for, like, 2 months. So, like, okay, another 2 weeks on top of that. And now you have your best rotation of the season, you have your best bullpen of the season. David Freese is a man possessed at third base, and he's going to be getting starts at either one of the corners while
Bell recovers.
Polanco is hitting like a madman. Starling Marte's hitting like a madman. Corey Dickerson's going to be back on Sunday.
He's in the top three hitters in the National League batting average-wise. So.
Yeah, I mean, it looks like the type of team. They're playing with confidence. Right now, they look like they would, you know, run through a wall.
Yeah.
For each other. It's what you want dynamic-wise. And, you know, I'm an analytical guy, so maybe people are a little surprised I'm talking about, you know, chemistry and, you know, some of those old sports writers' cliches, but I think there's something to be said for that. It's a lot easier to go out and play baseball whenever you want to play baseball because you think you're going to win.
And the interest that you talked about, wanting to play baseball because you think you're going to win, that is not just for the remainder of this year, and that's what's the most exciting point, or part about this, as we wrap this up, is that for the remainder of this year, entering next year, entering the year after that, we will have an ace, we will have a very good bullpen, and we will have some dangerous bats in this lineup, which is something that, coming into this season, we did not know if we would have any of those things. This is something that fans should be excited about, and this could potentially be a day that we look back to in the future and say it was the start of something great. I don't know how great, It could be another wild card. It could be our first division title and who knows how long. It could be our first playoff series and who knows how long. It could be something even better. I don't know. But this day, July 31st, 2018, could be the start of something very big in Pirates history.
This is the day where Neil Huntington, for the first 10 years and change of his run as general manager, he was operating with his brain throughout so many things, and it led to some great things. Today was the day he operated from his gut.
This is the day that Neil has made. Let us rejoice and be glad in it. I will sign off on that one. For my co-host, Alex Stumpf, I am Noah Hiles. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at AlexJStumpf, at Noah_Hiles95. Thank you for listening to this special episode of the River Blast podcast. Let's go, Bucks.